What's up, No Nation? It's Jesse from Plant the Spear. Thank you for joining me for another episode. It is opening day for FSU baseball. And for you Noel fans that are just as excited as I am, we've been waiting for this day for months now. After last year's historic turnaround under Link Jarrett, the trip to Omaha, you know, everything that went into that season, it was just so much fun to watch. I can't wait to see these guys get back in action tonight against James Madison. We're going to talk about that later in the show. We also have some FSU football talk. Mike Norvell has been out on the booster tour. There was also a good question that was put out by our friends over at Chop Chat on social media the other day that I want to take a chance at answering. In how many games does Mike Norvell have to win in 2025 to get off of your hot seat? And by your hot seat, that would be my hot seat. So that's what I'm going to take a stab at answering today. Michael is out with the flu today, my co-host, so we send him our well wishes and hope he gets back soon. But we're still going to dive into some content for you guys here. Now, before we do that, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, these guys have great gear. Make sure you check them out. 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee. If you're going to that opening day baseball series there, as well as online at alumnihall.com, navigate over to the FSU page and save 10% with code SPEAR. So thank you for supporting those that support us. And congratulations to our opening day giveaway winner, Ryan, who will be at that game today wearing some new FSU gear from Alumni Hall FSU. So make sure you like and subscribe to the channel. Stay connected to plantthespear.com as we do have more giveaways planned throughout the season. So with that being said, let's jump in and let's start with football because I know that's what everybody loves. We'll start there. Now, Mike Norvell has been out on his booster tour and he has brought some coordinators with him. I don't blame him there. You know, kind of like, hey, let me just slip off into the back of the room and look at the new shiny toys here to take the attention off of me, because you knew it was coming. You knew when he was going to be out speaking in the public for the first time since last season that there were going to be questions, and they were going to be difficult questions with how do you go from 13-1, 13-0 down to a 2-10 season, the season that we saw last year? How does that happen? And how do you promise us that that's not going to happen again? And so I was hoping to have Michael here because he was at the booster tour in Orlando, but I still have some takeaways to share from the clips that I've heard so far. And I think he has done a good job at his messaging throughout these stops. Now, with that being said, I, like most of you Noel fans out there, we're taking everything with a grain of salt this year, right? We are not believing coach speak. We're not trying to hear it this year. And I know you're probably thinking, well, you guys got some stuff wrong too last year, but do keep in mind we are not credentialed. So we had to rely on the coach speak. We had to rely on the other media outlets that did get to watch practice. I wish that would change. So hopefully, you know, if you're listening, people who give credentials at Florida State, help us out here. Because it would be nice to form your own opinion. And I'm not saying that they lied, but, you know, when you thought it was the best offensive line and it turned out to be the worst, we were misled. And so that's why I think this year we're not taking coach speak for granted. I think we are taking everything at face value. But some of the things that he said, I think, are worth talking about because they have been the right things to say. And I think the first of that is he's not making excuses for what happened. He acknowledges that 2-10 did happen, that it is not acceptable, and it cannot happen again. And I think he knows that. And I think he knew that these questions were coming. And so he did not try and hide or dodge the questions. He took them head on. Now, I think it's important also to not dwell on the past, because that doesn't do you any good going forward. Like, yes, it happened, but talking about it isn't going to change anything. So I do think it is important to acknowledge it and not hide from it, but also not dwell on it. And that's pretty much what he's done. He did even say that it's a learning opportunity. And as we all know, you learn from your mistakes. I mean, if you think about Mike Norvell's tenure, he's been a pretty successful coach throughout his career until he got to Florida State, and he's had some ups and downs. Obviously, the 3-6 year, the first season that he was here, I give him a little grace for that because it was, you know, a kind of a mess that he took over in a COVID season. So he kind of, you know, you had to do all kinds of things over Zoom and stuff like that. People feel differently about that. I understand, give him a little grace for that there, but he has not really been through a season like this. And so I think you, other than that one COVID season, which was kind of an animal amongst itself. And so I think you have to learn from this, and you have to learn how to not do it again. And I think one of the things that he talked about learning from that, which we all saw, he didn't really even have to address this, was his body language throughout the season and how he just looked defeated sometimes. He did not handle the losing well. And I think that's a bad thing that he displayed the body language like that. But I don't want my coach to handle 2-10 well, right? You don't want that. You want to be mad that you went 2-10. But I do think, and most of you know, when you talk about the body language, most of you know that as my full-time job is as a paramedic. And I often use, when people ask about that, I use the duck on the pond analogy, right? Where when you see a duck on a pond, its feet are kicking at 100 miles an hour under the water to move it around. But on top, the duck is just sitting there, calm as can be, cool, you know, Joe Cool on the water. And so in my profession, that's how I have to be. Inside, I might be kicking my feet at 100 miles an hour, but I got to be smooth as glass on, you know, on the surface, because if I freak out, someone else is going to freak out, and then it's not going to do anybody any good. And I think Mike Norvell needs to learn from that going into this year, whether good or bad. We've seen him really celebrate some things in the past where it was like, okay, Mike, don't let the moment be too big for you. You got to learn to handle it well, right? And I think because what he displays trickles down to everybody else, his staff, the players, the fans, the way things look. It looks bad when you look defeated in these post-game press conferences. It looks defeated when you're hanging your head on the sideline. And so I think that's one of the things that he's going to learn from as well. And I mean, again, remember, like I said, he's never really been through a season like this outside of that one with COVID, which was kind of its own animal. One of the other things that he talked about was finding an edge again. And now you could debate on why you lost the edge in year five of being here, but I do think everything that went into play with the snub and with the Orange Bowl and with the players opting out and things like that, I think it really did scar this program. And I really do think that had a lot of carryover into the offseason and then, you know, what happened last year. And so you do have to find that edge again. You do have to come out and be a team that plays aggressive, a team that wants to take your head off every week. And that's not something that we saw last year. We saw guys loafing a lot. We didn't see a lot of energy, a lot of excitement. They talked about in practice where the coaches had to force the energy. They were having to ask people to step up and be leaders. You know, they were, like I said, not giving great effort at times on the field. You lacked leadership. And so I do think finding that edge again is a big part of getting back to being successful. You know, there are teams that play above their talent level, and they do it because they're looking for a fight every time they go out on the field. And a lot of that starts in practice and being more physical in practice, which is something that I love that both coordinators talked about in their opening press conferences. You know, they talked about being physical starts in practice. And I hope that's something that we see that, you know, we here at Plant the Spear have been clamoring for a while. Like, we wanted to see them hit in practice, because some of these practice videos that you've seen come out are like, man, it's hard to turn on physicality on Saturdays when you don't practice it throughout the week. I know there's the risk of injury, but I mean, does it matter when you're going 2-10? So that's something I like to see as well. And that ties into what he said about having a fresh start with the new staff. And I do agree with that. I think that whether you love the staff or not, or all of the staff, I do think you're bringing in a much better staff than you had before. Now, I understand those guys got this program to 23-4 during that stretch. They had a lot of NFL talent at their disposal to do it. Now, they get credit for bringing in that talent as well and producing those wins. But a lot of those guys came from G5 schools or the major schools they had been at. They didn't have a whole lot of success. We know some of those guys weren't Mike Norvell's first choices when he got here, and he didn't really overhaul the staff a whole lot throughout the first 4 years before that fifth year hit. And it feels like there should have been some changes made earlier in his tenure, even after the good season. That's something that we thought. But now you're bringing in guys that come from Power 5 programs. You're bringing in, and I know his success is, you know, behind him a little bit here with Gus Malzahn, but a guy who's won at the highest level, a guy who's been in a national championship game. And so I think this new staff, the fresh start, the messaging, knowing what it's like to win at a Power 4 program, I think that is going to pay big dividends going into the future here. And, you know, I do think one thing that they talked about as well is with Gus, I always want to call him Gus Norvell, but Gus Malzahn. I do like that there was some talk about how he was really kind of losing grip of being with a head coach with everything that has to go on right now with all the NIL and roster management and transfer portal and things like that. And so you're going to put him back into that OC role. But I got more on that later that I want to talk about when we get into the hot seat talk. I also think the player evaluations was a big topic that he talked about as well. And I think that is something where the lack of evaluations or quality evaluations last year has really made a lot of us turn our back on the portal. But we also lose sight that if it wasn't for the portal, this program probably wouldn't be where it is right now. We would still be trying to rebuild ourselves. And the portal got us to 23-4 and that ACC championship. And so I just want to see them get back to really nailing these evaluations, finding a Jared Verse on film for Albany when you're scouting Syracuse, not just taking guys from a program with a nice logo that are that is a backup for a reason. And I think that's a lot of what we saw last year. You know, I even said, and of course I projected, I never in a million years saw us going 2-10 last year, but I did say after I watched the spring game, like when we went from Braden Fisk to Grady Kelly, I knew we were cooked. I knew we were in trouble. And so that's why, one reason why I'm disappointed that we don't get a spring game this year, because we don't get to see this team in person. But, you know, and the last thing I want to talk about from the booster tour is how they did talk about Norvell and Malzahn will blend offensive concepts. I think that does probably mean that Norvell is going to want to put some of his passing concepts in with Malzahn's running concepts, because you know he's very much a run-heavy coach. Norvell likes to pass. He usually uses the pro-style quarterbacks. You know, you've already had two leave because of what this offense is going to look like. But I do think Norvell had a bad season last year, right? One of the worst offenses, Florida State, college football history, his history. But he's had good offenses in the past. So hopefully when you see the two minds combined, you can get back to the things that we saw at Tulsa back in the day, which were some of the most electric offenses in college football history. Now, is it going to work? And I think that's what leads us into the next segment of the show, which is the hot seat talk. And again, this is a question that was put out on social media by our friends over at Chop Chat. Kelvin asked the article, or asked the question on social media and wrote the article. And so make sure you check those guys out as well. They do a great job with their coverage of FSU. And I saw most of the replies on social media, and it got me to thinking, like, what would be my answer? How would Mike Norvell get off the hot seat, my hot seat, if I were making the decision in 2025? Now, one of the things that I think there's a few things that we need to go first things first, right? And I'm going to put this out in an article on plantthespear.com as well. So make sure you check that out to kind of get an in-depth take on this. But I think first things first that we have to start with is there's a few truths that we have to understand, right? And one of the things that I agreed with that Kelvin said in his article is that whatever our opinion is as fans, that does not mean the athletic department is going to mirror that opinion, right? Just because we think he should be fired at 8-4 doesn't mean they're going to feel the same way, because there are massive, and I mean massive, financial repercussions for making that decision. You have to not only buy out Mike Norvell, which, you know, with that big extension he just got, you also have to buy out the entire new staff that you just brought in, unless you were to do something like promote Tony White to head coach, or hopefully not, but Gus Malzahn to head coach or something like that, which I don't see that happening, because they would be part of it being not good too. And then you also would have to pay out all this money to get in a new staff. And I'm sure you guys have seen where Penn State's paying their DC $3.1 million. Auburn just gave their DC well over $2.5 million. And so I thought coaching salaries might come down in the NIL era to put funds more towards player acquisition. It doesn't appear to be that way. So that is a huge financial commitment. At the same time, the university is building the football-only facility, remodeling Doak. They got to go hire a new basketball coach. And so they have all these other things going on, and I don't know what their finances look like. They might have the money to do it, but it's in the best interest of Florida State and us as fans and boosters for Mike Norvell and the staff to succeed. That is what is in the best interest, because that is how you can get away with this, you know, get back to success without it costing you an arm and a leg. I mean, even look at Ohio State last year when they said that they operated at what was like $30 million deficit or something like that. And a big part of that was having to buy out their basketball coach. And so you think about all these buyouts. I know it's easy for us to say, yeah, fire him. It's not that easy. It's just not. And so I think you want him to win. You want him to succeed. And so I think that is something that is important to address first. And Kelvin even says in his article that he doesn't think 8-4 gets Mike Norvell fired. And I would even go one step further that I don't think 7-5 gets Mike Norvell fired. Yes, you could argue that it does show some progress, and it is progress from a mess that he made. So I don't know how much credit you get for that progress, but I don't know that 7-5 is bad enough to make that big of a financial commitment. Now, of course, you're going to be still on the hot seat in 2026 if you only go 7-5, and that's what we're going to talk about with my answer here. But the other thing that I wanted to say was that, yes, okay, first, the other truth that we have to acknowledge is 8-4 is not acceptable at Florida State. It is not the standard that has been set here. 2-10 sure as hell isn't the standard here. And so with that being said, the way I wanted to answer this is I think the first thing you have to do is to draw a line in the sand. What is how many wins? And he I will give Kelvin credit. He did say realistically gets him off the hot seat. But for me, the difference for me here is even in a realistic scenario, I think you have to draw a line in the sand between what gets him another year and what gets him off the hot seat. Because in my opinion, that's two different conversations, right? I think you can do enough to get another year and feel good about where the program's headed without it being getting you off the hot seat. Because getting you off the hot seat means I trust you now. I trust that this is not going to happen. Things like last year are not going to happen again. I trust that you are going to be here for a long time. We are not worried about what's going to happen next year. So there's going to have to be a big gap to me between those two seasons look like. And I do think the first thing to say, obviously, is that it depends on what it looks like, right? And the thing is with Mike Norvell is, you know, how quickly things can change. You know, when you think back to after that ACC championship where they beat Louisville, Mike Norvell's seat was cold as ice. And we just thought, you know, hey, this is we are back rolling. We're going to get into the playoffs, all this type of stuff. And then the snub happened. And that was not his fault. But the things that transpired after that really crunked the heat up on that seat. And then last year has that thing flaming hot. And so right now, I think you want to see in 2025 enough progress to ensure an unsure future. And I think that's really important, but it does depend on what it looks like. And I do think we have to keep in mind that Mike Norvell does get credit for the success that he's had, the 10-win season, the 13-win season. I think winning an ACC championship for the first time in a decade at Florida State, I think he does get credit for that because there are a lot of good coaches at good programs that have not achieved that. I mean, you think about Miami, 21 years without an ACC championship. Florida, 100-plus years without an undefeated season. NC State, another solid program with a solid coach, hasn't won the ACC since, I think, 1972, has only had one 10-win season in program history. And so I think Mike Norvell does get credit for the success that he's had, especially knowing what he took over and how fast he was able to turn it into a winning program. But he also has to wear the blame of having three losing seasons in 5 years, and it is now year six. So you have to be able to almost act like last year didn't happen. That's, to me, one of the big things is you have to get right back to where you were at to get off that hot seat. Now, the reason I say that a lot of it depends on what it looks like is because, let's be honest, guys, this is college football. And Mike Norvell has done a lot of good things off the field, you know, in the classroom, behavior, on the team. We don't have a lot of off-the-field problems. He's donated the money. He's restructured his contract to help the university out. He's doing all the right things. But winning on the field is still what matters. Putting butts in the seats, getting eyeballs on TV, having success on the field, that's still what really matters. And so I think when you talk about wins on the field, let's start there. Let's talk about on-field results and why I think it all depends on what it looks like. So when I look at the schedule for Florida State in 2025, assuming that Florida State is typical Florida State, where you are not worried about going into games against Pitt or against, you know, Virginia or things like that, I think there are 7 winnable games on the schedule. Should win games. Let me call it that. Should win games. That's East Texas A&M, Kent State, UVA, Pitt, Stanford, Wake Forest, and Virginia Tech. Now, I say there is one toss-up game in there as well, and that is at NC State. And maybe this is just me as a longtime FSU fan who's traumatized by going to play at Carter-Finley or in non-Saturday games. I'm sure most of you probably feel that way too. But I give that a toss-up, right, because of just where it's at and when it is. And maybe it shouldn't be, but that's just, you know, my FSU PTSD coming back. But then I think there are 4 games on the schedule where you are not going to be favored and you are going to have to pull an upset. And of course, that is Alabama, Miami, Clemson, and Florida. And so when we go into this, you know, if you win, the first thing you got to say is there is very little room for error to get where Florida State needs to be, right? If you lose any of those should win games, you now probably need to pull an upset to get to 8-4 or even 7-5. And so you have to win those should win games. But let's assume that Florida State wins every single one of those games, all of those 7. But then let's say that, and let's say they even upset NC State, right? Or not upset, but they go on the road and they get that win. Well, yes, that gets us to 8-4, which is much better than 2-10, and where a lot of the answers that everybody gave on Chop Chat's social media posts, 8 wins was about where people wanted to be. To me, that depends on whether we're getting off the hot seat or not. That's good enough to get us another year, but let's just say you win those games and you show signs of progress. But let's say you lose, you go 8-4, you lose to both rivals, you get blown out by Alabama, you get blown out by Clemson on the road. Does that get you off the hot seat? No, not even close. Not to me anyway. I think, sure, you could have the conversation that it gets you another year. Or even then, like, let's say that you go 8-4 and you have a close loss against Alabama, a close loss against Clemson, a close loss against, you know, say Florida, and then you upset Miami, but you lose to NC State, and 3 of those 4 teams go on to make the playoffs, you know, because Alabama, Clemson, maybe even Florida and Miami could be playoff contenders. And so then all of a sudden, that 8-4 doesn't sound so bad. And so I do think that it depends on how it looks like, right? I think first and foremost, Florida State has to look competitive in every game. You can't come out and look like you did last year, just like an unmitigated disaster. You know, you can't come out and lose 34-3 against Alabama and then lose by 30 to Clemson and then lose by 30 to basically all the good teams on your schedule. You can't do that. That's not getting off the hot seat, no matter if you go 8-4 or not, to me. And that's why I say this is a different conversation between what gets you another year and what gets you off the hot seat. To me, 8-4 does not get him off the hot seat. It only gets him another year. Again, depending on how it looks like. Like I said, if you go 8-4 with 4 blowout losses against the best teams on your schedule, yes, you're going to get another year, because I promise you, if he goes 8-4, he's going to be here in 2026. But that doesn't mean he's going to get off the hot seat, because that's not a good season. But again, you know, going back to the previous example, if you go 8-4 and say you upset Miami at home, but and you keep it close with 3 playoff teams, that's not so much a bad 8-4 record. And we don't have moral victories here in Tallahassee. We don't. But you get what I'm saying. 8-4 can look a lot of different ways. And a lot of that depends on the standard that has been set at the program you're coaching at. And I think a great example of that is if you look back to last year, 2 programs that are a great example of this are, look at South Carolina. South Carolina went 9-4 last year. I think they won like their final 6 games or something like that. Maybe they lost the bowl game, but they were on a winning streak. They were in the running, trying to, you know, make their bid for the playoffs and things like that. They should have beat Alabama. Shane Beamer came into last year on the hot seat, and then they had the first game, I think it was against Old Dominion, where they snuck away with a win. And, you know, they hammered Kentucky the game after that, and it switched the view of things. But one 9-4 season got Shane Beamer off the hot seat. Now you switch over to Alabama. Kalen DeBoer comes in, takes over for Nick Saban, at a program where the standard has been set high. The bar is high at Alabama from the success that they had under Nick Saban. Well, all of a sudden, 9-4 looks terrible. They lost to Vanderbilt. They got blown out by a 6-win South Carolina. They lost their bowl game. And fans are ready to break out the pitchforks and run Kalen DeBoer out of town. And so, again, that record can look totally different depending on how it shakes out and also depending on the standard at your program. And that's why I think when you talk about Florida State, it's not an easy place to coach, because that standard is high. A 9-4 season at South Carolina might be great for them, but it's a disappointment for us. And so I think that, and that's, you know, I'm not trying to knock on South Carolina. I know they're a decent program, but the point is where you're at Florida State and where the expectations are, 8-4, 9-4, things like that, that's not good enough. But it's, I think, knowing that you came from 2-10, it's good enough to get you another year. But to me, to get off of my hot seat, again, not to get another year, but to get off of my hot seat, I'm thinking you need to go a minimum of 9-3 or probably 10-2. And I think the only losses would probably need to be close losses to like Alabama, Clemson, maybe Miami or Florida, like 1-2 of those teams that are in contention for the playoffs. I think you need to compete for the ACC championship, like actually be in the game, whether you win it or not. I think you need to be in the game. And then I think you need to look competitive in every single game. If you were to lose 2 games or 3 games, I think it needs to be 1-score losses, because again, for me to be like, you are no longer on the hot seat and I feel good about you going forward, I think you need to, again, act like last year basically didn't happen. You need to be at that 10-win level. You need to be competing for the conference championship. You need to show that really drastic turnaround. And I think it needs to look good while you're doing it. That, to me, is what gets off the hot seat. Not just doing good enough to get another year and then let's see how it looks in 2026. That's a different conversation. Now, I will say, because it is year six for Mike Norvell, let's remember that too. And let me say this. I am as pro Mike Norvell as anybody else. I want him to win. I want him to be successful. He is our coach, and I am cheering for him. He's a great guy, and I think he would be great to be the successful head coach at this program. But some of the other factors that I say when we talk about getting off the hot seat, we've established kind of what the on-field results look like. It needs to be at a certain level, and it needs to look a certain way. You know, because, again, you lose to both rivals, and you get blown out against tough teams, you're not going to be feeling like he's off the hot seat no matter what the record is. So it needs to look a certain way. Some of the other things that I think here are, one, recruiting progress. I think that's another thing that's important that we need to see. You know, that's been a real hot button issue since Mike Norvell has really arrived at Florida State, is that we have yet to land a top 10 class. Now, he's come close. He's had the number 12 class. And I do think that I am very much encouraged by what the staff did, you know, from picking up things that were in shambles, class in the 50s, got it up to 20, you know, top 20 class by signing day, got some big flips there at the end of the recruiting cycle. I think they did a really good job. And that gives me hope for the future that this staff is going to be able to finally land one of them top 10 classes. And I know sometimes star ratings and class ratings can be overblown. But I do think that when you, and this is not what I think, actually, this is what I know. When you look at the teams that compete consistently for national championships, they consistently sign top 10 classes. And so I think you need to see that progress as well. You know, what if Florida State were to go, let's say they go 9-3. Some of these teams aren't what we thought they were. Maybe they're just not as good as we thought. And Florida State goes 9-3, but your recruiting class is 28th or something like that, you're still going to be like, man, come on, right? But what if Florida State goes 8-4, whether it's good or bad, you know, from a perception standpoint, but they have a top five class and things are starting to look better. They have a lot of late season momentum. They got a lot of good commitments. Are you going to risk firing that staff after 8-4 with a top five class, knowing that you have a lot of momentum going into 2026 and you will wipe all that away, lose most of those recruits? I know most of them might not even stay anyway. That's not something I would be willing to risk. And so I think the recruiting aspect makes a big difference too. And then the last thing I would say here is I want to see proof of concept in these hires, because let's be honest, when he hired Gus Malzahn, I almost said it again. When he hired Gus Malzahn, I think it's going to end up being a good hire, right? Because I think getting him out of that head coaching role and everything that comes with that and letting him just call an offense, letting him just focus on offensive game planning, I think he'll be good in that role. But that did not come without a lot of heartburn by Florida State fans. Like, you know, hey, this guy hasn't been successful in a long time. Now, he had good offenses at UCF, but you get the point. And so if he was willing, Mike Norvell was willing to risk his future on a coach that came with a little bit of you know, trepidation amongst fans, you need to see that that was a good decision. Why did you choose to do that when you could have went out and got, you know, different guys like a Brandon Marion or something like that? I think the Tony White hire is going to be great. But let's be honest, if Tony White does good at Florida State in 2 to 3 years, we're probably going to need another defensive coordinator because he's going to move on to a head coaching role. He's already interviewed for head coaching jobs in the past. And so you are going to want to know that you can trust Mike Norvell's hiring process. Now, he is someone that has been praised as a good hiring coach in the past. But I would say that guys like Atkins were a bust. Love Dugans as a former Noel, that was a bust. Randy, why? You know, and things like that. So that's the other thing that I want to see. I want to see the on-the-field results. I want to see the recruiting progress. I want to see the proof of concept by the guys you chose to bring in to rebuild this program. That's what I need to see before I'm quote-unquote willing to take you off my hot seat. Now, they can do a lot of things to make it look better to get another year into 2026, which is what outside of utter disaster, like less than 6-6 and not making a bowl, I think is going to be the case anyway. I think that's what's going to happen. But I do think that to get them off the hot seat, let's be honest, guys, like last year was a breach of trust amongst FSU fans. You know, we thought that we know it's probably not realistic to go out and win a national championship every single year, right? You don't see a lot of dynasties built anymore. And even the ones like Alabama that was built, it's questionable right now. You know, Georgia's having a hard time sustaining. Clemson's not who they used to be. But we never in a million years thought 2-10 was in there. And now that we know that is in Mike Norvell's realm of possibility, it's going to take more than 8-4 to rebuild that trust for me. And I'm sure for most of you, we're going to have to see repeated seasons where the success is sustained. I don't know that he can get off my hot seat in 2025. If we're being honest, I think he can go a long way for rebuilding that trust and getting off the hot seat in 2025 by having a good season, by going like 10-2 and winning, or 10-2 and winning the ACC, or whatever the case may be, 10-3, winning the ACC and maybe even sneaking into the playoffs. Yeah, sure, that's going to go a long way into rebuilding that trust. But I don't know that 2025, there's enough there, knowing that 2-10 was in there, knowing that we've had three losing seasons in 5 years now. So he can go a long way in doing that, but it's going to have to be better than 8-4. I can say that. But again, I do think he can start on building that bridge, right? Repairing that road of trust with the fans and with the program, because I do think he is a good coach. And like I said, he gets credit for keeping in mind that he did go 10-3 and then 13-0 until things that happened that were out of his control. And I don't think it's a good thing to get in the cycle of hiring and firing coaches repeatedly. And so I do want it to work out with him. But I thought that was an interesting conversation to have, and I'm sure most of you probably have a number in your head too, but I thought it was interesting where most fans said 8-4, and that's why I said, well, you know, I think 8-4 is good enough to get another season. You can get 2026, and I think they're going to do that, even at 7-5, but the standard is the standard at Florida State, and 8-4 is not getting you off the hot seat. Look, you either win or you get fired here. That is the way it works. I'm sorry. You signed up for a standard that you knew. This is not an easy place to be a coach. And so I definitely think that I'm excited to see how next season shakes out, but I don't know that he can get off of my hot seat until I see sustained success at a level that's better than 8-4, because 8-4 is not success. Now, again, like I said, 8-4 can look a lot better, and 8-4 can also look bad. And so we need to see how it looks. It needs to look like a competent, well-coached team that is competitive, that plays hard, that's physical, that goes out every week and puts up a fight in every single game. They're making recruiting progress, and these coaches look like they were great choices to bring in. So that's really my answer to the question posed by Chop Chat. If you're watching on YouTube where you can comment, let me know below what you think. What is your number? Can he even get off the hot seat for you guys this year? Because again, man, I think it's going to be really interesting. And I do think they're going to have a big turnaround this season. But you know, like I said, there's a long way to go to rebuilding that trust. So let me know what you guys think. Now, with that being said, let's talk about opening day for baseball. Look, this is a day that I know a lot of you guys have been excited about as well. You know, after last year, that team had a massive turnaround. Talking about big turnarounds, Florida State was terrible in 2022. And then in 2023, then 24, they had a massive turnaround, made it all the way out to Omaha, one of the last four teams standing. That's what we need from our football program. Maybe Link can give Mike a pep talk going into the season, but it's a similar process here with Florida State baseball. You know, they lost a lot of their big offensive weapons coming into this year. They're a preseason top 10, consensus top 10 team, and this is their chance to prove that. Now, it's go time, right? There's no more preparation. Talking season is over. Time to lace up the spikes and get to work. And that's where we're at this weekend against James Madison. Now, James Madison is a decent team. Last year, they went 36-25, 17-13 in the Sun Belt. Florida State does hold a 6-0 advantage all time against them. This was a pretty good hitting team last year, batted just under .300 at .297, averaging 7.3 runs per game. So the thing is, though, and again, I want to remind you guys, depending on when you're watching this, they may already be playing. We do have previews for Florida State baseball, offense, defense, pitching. We also have a James Madison series preview, all that stuff over at the website. Make sure you go check that out. But this team lost 6 of 9 starters from last year, so they got a lot of pieces to replace too. And I feel like what Florida State has done in replacing their starters is going to give them an advantage in this game. Because again, James Madison is not a terrible program, but it's not like you're rolling in against maybe some of the really, you know, downtrodden programs that you had, that you have coming up on your schedule. You know, last year, Florida State baseball started, I believe, 19-0, but they really didn't play any tough series early on in the season. They had a lot of chance to get ramped up before they eventually went up to Clemson, and they did lose that series. But this one is kind of a decent test before you get some weaker teams coming up on the schedule. And, of course, they have almost Murderer's Row coming up on their ACC schedule. They got a lot of ranked teams coming up. But, again, James Madison is the team that lost 6 of 9 starters last year, as well as some pitching, some of their top pitchers as well. So I think Florida State's going to do well this weekend. Now let's talk about the pitching matchups here. Friday night, 5 o'clock, ACC Network Extra is where these games will be streaming. And, man, I don't know if there's anything sweeter on Valentine's Day than getting to watch Jamie Arnold take the mound again, because this is one of the undisputed, probably the undisputed best pitcher in the country right now. Left-handed ace Jamie Arnold is going to get the start for Florida State on Friday night, as expected. He is the anchor of this weekend rotation. 11-3 last year, 2.98 ERA, just an electric guy. Can't wait to see Jamie Arnold get back on the mound. Now, he's going to be going up against right-handed pitcher Jackson Logar, who is kind of their guy that stepped into the starting role. 5.19 ERA last year. Looking at Saturday, February 15th at 2 p.m. for Game 2, left-handed pitcher Joey Vellini, South Florida transfer, coming into Florida State, coming off Tommy John in 2013, did get back to work with South Florida there in 2024, 3-0 record as a starter, 4.4 ERA, going up against left-handed pitcher Jaden Kinsler for James Madison, 3-2 record, 6 even ERA last year. Joey Vellini, from what I understand from a lot of the fall reports, is just, man, he looks good. He looks like he's fully recovered, and he's a guy who's got some electric stuff. Link said he's a very consistent, maybe the most consistent pitcher that he's got in the rotation. So I'm really excited to see what he looks like as well. Closing out the weekend for Florida State on Sunday is going to be left-handed pitcher Wes Mendez. Comes over from Ole Miss, an Ole Miss transfer. 2-1 record, 6.82 ERA. In 2024 with the Rebels, going against right-handed pitcher Todd Mazzocchi for James Madison. They're 5-2 record, 6.62 ERA. Now, as far as Mendez goes, they did say that he's got really good stuff, but it's just kind of like a bull in a china shop. You're just trying to rein that in and get the control there, and then doing that will lead to success for him. So this starting rotation for the weekend, it may evolve. You know, you have some other guys that could work their way into that starting rotation, but this is what Link's going with for opening weekend. I am excited about what you got on the mound. Florida State also improved their bullpen depth over this offseason. You know, last year was one that was, the bullpen was really up and down. They started really slow, struggled mightily. Then later in the season, when everyone kind of criticized them, they stepped up when they needed it most. But you want to see more consistency and more depth out of the bullpen this year. And I think they did a good job addressing that. So, you know, I was talking with Jeff, our baseball analyst for Plant the Spear, and, you know, he's saying that I don't expect a lot of these starters to go more than maybe 4 or 5 innings. I think that's probably going to be the case there, because you want to start them off with a light workload. Hopefully you have a big enough lead where you feel comfortable making that change and then finding out what you got from your bullpen there. So just looking at this matchup here, I think Florida State has the horses to go out here and get a sweep of James Madison this weekend. And I think it's more about seeing what your pitching is looking like, what that bullpen is looking like, what this new lineup is going to look like, because obviously you lost a lot of power with James Tibbs and Cam Smith and, you know, the guy Ferrer and the guys that you lost last year, Marco Dinges, all these guys that departed the roster. You got a lot of new pieces to replace. And so I think you're going to want to see what you got in this lineup but I think you're going to have a consistently good lineup here. So you still got guys like Max Williams in there coming back from last year. You still got, you know, a lot of talent on this roster, and they've done a really good job in the portal. They've done a really good job in high school recruiting. So Florida State baseball gets back underway this weekend in Dick Houser Stadium. I know I'm ready. I know the Animals are fired up and ready. You know, the best fans in college baseball, and I know you guys are ready too. So really looking forward to this. They may already be underway by the time you watch this, but that's just a little preview there for this weekend's opening series. So excited to see them get back underway. Appreciate you guys watching. Drop a like and subscribe if you enjoy this video. Rate and review on the podcast. Help us reach other Noel fans. We are so close to hitting 2,000 subs on YouTube. That would mean a lot to us. Really appreciate you guys supporting us throughout this journey. Make sure you check out plantthespear.com. We are publishing football articles, baseball articles. We got some stuff on basketball too. Before we jump out of here, Sam Cassell is a name that has emerged as a leading candidate for Florida State's basketball opening at the end of the season when Leonard Hamilton retires. Now, from what the article I read, he says Florida State has not reached out to him yet, but there is mutual interest there. So that's a name to watch there as well. I know Luke Laux is also in the mix. And of course, Charlie Ward is a name that's been tied to this as well. But Sam Cassell seems to be the candidate that's emerged. So that's one to keep your eyes on. So make sure you stay tuned with us, guys. Make sure you check out alumnihall.com for all your FSU gear needs. And we will catch you guys on the next one. Thanks for watching. And as always, go Noles.